Welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA. I've retaken control after a renegade operation went on while I was traveling over here to Paris, where I am on Wednesday afternoon. But joining me on Wednesday morning from Boston, where he will attend game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight between the Celtics and the Heat, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, Brian, and thank God you're back, because I don't want to be in charge. So I'm very glad to have you be hosting again.
I never thought he would say those words. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where he's taken a couple of days before joining the Western Conference Finals, is Van McMahon.
He's Van McMahon, Van McMahon. He's the fattest dude in all the land. You got Texas blood as thick as mud. He's Van McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Wendy, I'm not going to lie. I am just a wee bit perturbed at you because, okay, it's one thing for you to go wee-wee in and, you know, oh, I'm going to go do some fancy European crap. I don't have time for you guys. I get it. Okay, escargot and all that crap, I understand. So how you leave Bontemps in charge, I will never forgive you. I'll never forgive you for that. This is like when Jordan's gone. Phil Jackson draws up the last play for Tony Kukoc, not Scottie Pippen. This is bullcrap.
Are you Kukoc or Pippen in that situation?
I'm damn sure Pippen. I'm a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
Excuse me, sir. Bontemps is just Euro that everyone's excited about.
Excuse me, sir. I believe Tony Kukoc is a Hall of Famer too.
All right, whatever, dude. I'm a Hall of Famer based on my NBA career, not on.
Oh, I see. You know, okay, there you go.
And the Bulls won the game, and we had to make sure that we could have somebody actually get on the pod, because you never know with the IT department what's happening in Dallas if we're able to connect and be ready to go.
Well, here's
the
real thing.
We were in the IT department. Oh, okay.
I was making fun of you and your inability to do things.
Taking shots at the IT department, I guarantee you, hell hath no wrath like a scorned IT department.
Well, I was just going to say,
where I stand. We're good.
Our plan was for me to fly overnight and then do the pod when I got here, but then I got delayed coming out of the U.S. And then on our way into Paris, if you want the full story, I had an aborted landing, which is always fun in a jumbo jet, coming in, getting 100 yards off the deck, and the pulling back up on the pilot, and the pilot coming on and going, can't see the runway. So that was a fun time. So we had to make a decision, and we ran out of time. But thank you for filling in, gentlemen.
We can talk about your assignment.
Yeah, I came to Paris to spend the last couple of days with Victor Wembanyama. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about the interview that we did the first day, but there was a major interview that was done the first day that I was here for. I didn't sleep, by the way. Went right from the airport to the interview, basically. And it was a high profile interview with somebody in the Disney family. That's all I don't know if I'm allowed to say. Maybe I'm allowed, but I don't know if I'm allowed. So I was there to help be there for that with Victor. And then Tuesday, I basically spent the evening with him. I went to his final regular season home game. They played their crosstown rival. His team is located kind of just outside the city limits of Paris. And then there's a team in Paris that's owned by Americans and coached by an American, Will Weaver. And they played last game of the regular season, you know, classic rivalry game. The other Paris team, which is known as Paris Basket, needed to win to get into the playoffs. They were tied for eighth seed. And Victor got in foul trouble and didn't play much in the second and third quarters, and then had a 14-point fourth quarter where he made several just brilliant plays. And he had a dunk with 6 seconds left that basically iced the game. So they were very excited. They clinched the number two seed. And that was like at 10:30 p.m. You know, and so we get in the cars and we drive over to Nike, which has a flagship store on the Champs-Élysées, the main boulevard that leads up to the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. And then it's right. It's two blocks from Rue McMahon.
It is.
Yeah. So Rue McMahon is very close to the Champs-Élysées. Rue McMahon goes right into the Arc de Triomphe, improbably.
I've got pictures from the top of the Arc de Triomphe just looking right over my road.
It's spectacular. And it is actually a spectacular street. You should be proud of your namesake. And so there is a couple of big time French celebrities there. There was only probably about maybe 60 people at this gathering. It wasn't like for 1,000 people. It was in a small, you know, basically like, I think it's kind of like the cafeteria room that Nike has here for their people. The ceiling is about 7'6" because Victor made it in by 1 inch. Like Kylian Mbappe was just hanging around there.
Who's he?
And this guy. Yeah. And this guy, Omar, I'm afraid I'm going to mispronounce his name. People were making a freaking huge deal about him at the game. And then he came also to the party. Omar.
S-Y.
Yeah. Omar Say, Omar Sy. He's pretty much.
I read your story. I've never heard of him either.
Well, he's like the Tom Cruise of France. He was in some American movies. He lives in LA.
Scientologist.
I didn't get that kind of detail. I'm sure it's well reported about. And then Michael Rubin was here. I don't know for sure, but I suspect that Mr. Wembanyama is about to ink a deal with Fanatics.
Michael Rubin is everywhere, so I can't say I'm surprised.
Yeah, he was sitting about 20 feet from me and Bontemps in Philly a few days ago, and he still getting over. You know, he used to be a part owner of the Sixers. He just sold it, his stake, but still very, very big Sixers supporter. Obviously, you know, like he's hanging out with your boy Little Baby there, McMahon.
No, good buddies with James Harden.
Yeah, they were hanging out.
Harden ended up in Philly.
It was me, Bontemps, Michael Rubin, Little Baby hanging out in Philly last week.
Oh, nice. Did honey buns involved?
I can't speak to it. So it was this surreal situation where, you know, it's the lottery came on at 2 a.m. And the lottery opens. So Victor and his family are all sitting there. There's a big giant couch that they have in there. They have a huge television and they have the ESPN feed. It's not some international feed. And so Malika Andrews opens the show and I am listening in my earpiece because I'm getting ready to do this interview with him right after he, finds out with the lottery, which by the way, like the concept that Victor, that we would, you know, be able to get this done. Just the idea that in one of the biggest lotteries of the last 20 years, maybe the biggest of the last 20 years, that Victor, it's one thing to allow a camera to see you as you find out who's going to, it's another thing to do an interview 1 minute, essentially what it was. The Western Conference Finals game one had to start. So I think 2:25 AM, it was the timing that it was going to be announced. 2:27, Malika needed to be throwing to me. So I was standing there like, less than 10 feet from him because I had to be in position and he was with his family, he was with his agents, his mom and dad on either side of him, his two primary agents were there, his brother and sister, his grandmother, his coach from his team was also the coach of the French national team. Vincent Collet was sitting right next to me. Michael Rubin, of course, Mbappe, the actor guy had left. I don't know where he
went. And Wendy Stone elbows to get through all of them.
Yeah. I'm like, get out of the way.
We cleared space for the real celebrity in the room.
That's right.
Ryan Windhorst.
So I had about a 1.5 second. So I was hearing the show in my earpiece through our satellite in real time. So, and then obviously it had to go on TV. Now, sometimes you see TV delayed 10, 15 seconds, but it was only about a second and a half delay. But I was aware of the envelopes, you know, slightly ahead of the room. And one of Victor's agents, I let him know, I go, do you want me to give you a signal? And he's like, no, let's just, we'll find out together. So there was open the show and Adrian Wojnarowski, who is generally conservative by nature when it comes to speaking about like players. Like, I don't think he's not Stephen A, right? I don't think that's,
he's not a hype man.
Right. And Adrian opens the show by talking about how Victor is not only seen by NBA executives as one of the great prospects in the history of the league, but one of the great prospects in team sports. And then he's
maybe
saying,
the best of all time, something along those lines.
Yeah. Then he's saying that within three years that he could be the best offensive defensive player in the league. Okay. Just Woj saying that in a vacuum is remarkable. Okay. Now I'm sitting there and everybody's sitting there and Victor is listening to it. And it was a surreal. So I'm watching Victor listen to it. And he's like making this face, like he's kind of like smiling, but like, just like it. I mean, just think how awkward that would be. Think how awkward it is. Like when your mom like praises you in front of, you know, somebody else's parents, you know, it feels awkward. Now think of this going on. Okay.
I've never had an issue with being praised publicly.
Yes, I'm aware. So it was a very strange feeling. And like, I'm looking over at Vincent Collette, who is, you know, the Greg Popovich of France. And he's just looking at me like, I can't believe this. And by the way, Collette feels the same way. He doesn't disagree.
Right.
He's obviously a huge believer in Victor, but just the moment that, you know, and it's two in the morning in Paris, just, you know, on a Tuesday night, just the whole thing is odd. Like the other thing is there's not that many people in the room that speak English. I mean, certainly Victor does. Certainly Collette does. The agents do. Everybody, you know, his parents understand English. Some people are understanding what's being said there. Not everybody understands the gravity of what Woj is saying. Certainly his agents, Buna and Jeremy, who are French, but, you know, have represented players in the NBA for years. They know Woj.
Buna's Senegalese, but he deep roots in France.
Yes. Well, he's from Paris. Anyway, Collette, you know, like he obviously knows Woj, you know, so that was just that moment alone was just crazy. You get to the lottery and you're just ripping through the cities. You know, there was a few places that were super going to be interesting. You know, would Chicago move up? No. Would Dallas move up? Victor definitely reacted when Dallas came up because obviously he knew that playing with Luka Doncic would be fascinating. That was a discussion that I had with his agents.
When you say he reacted, how did he react? Was that a happy reaction or a sad reaction?
No, I just like, you know, look, he didn't react when New Orleans and Toronto and Washington.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What kind of, I'm curious, like, what kind of reaction,
you know, he raised his eyebrows and like, you know, gave like a look, like he was
basically, he could have seen, he certainly had pictured himself playing with Luka.
Yes.
Just that possibility intrigued. This very slim 3% possibility intrigued.
Right. But Victor is very studied and very savvy. Like he did his homework on all this. He knew it wasn't likely. I mean, he was, you know, very well prepared, but obviously there was some interest when when Mark Tatum held up number 10, that the room tightened a little bit because that was a thing. And then I think when they went to the break, which is always the fascinating moment when you know the top four, the discussion in the room was about the Blazers. Like, could he go to the Blazers? Now here's something else. So Mike Schmitz, who used to be our colleague here at ESPN, Mike Schmitz first saw Victor in 2018 when
he was assistant GM with Portland for those.
Right.
Don't
know. But Mike Schmitz heavily.
He was the guy who introduced him to the world, really. I mean, nobody had ever heard anything of this guy before Mike did that story on him several years ago.
Right. So Mike Schmitz has known the family for 5 years. Like, there was I'm not saying that there was a preference in Portland, just to be clear, but when Portland made the top four, that was a discussion in the room. What about Portland? And, you know, I text back and forth with Schmitz yesterday. Obviously it was a humongous day for the Blazers. In fact, their pick now, I think once you get past the Wembanyama situation, which is huge, when you now take a step back and look at the rest of the lay of the land, the Portland pick is one of the most fascinating things between now and 100%. Whatever it is, June 22nd.
I mean, it's the most other than Victor for sure. What do they do?
Yeah, because
it's almost because like the you Blazers, have to pick between using that pick or keeping Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Blazers pretty much came out and like announced, we intend to do everything we possibly can to build this team up right now. We're going to hurry up, which was like a broadcast. The pick's going to be available probably unless it was number one. Well, now the pick improved. So now you're looking at Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller there. And, you know, you're looking at a 19-year-old going with what is Dame, 31? So that's a big thing. So
after Dame made clear he has no interest in you know, building with youth. But back to Vic.
Look, and so the other thing is Houston. So Houston was a fascinating option because Houston has, again, announced, this is what Raphael Stone has said. He has said, we are going to go out and use our $60 million cap space to sign veterans, and we intend to get better now. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we all know they're going to go after James Harden. James Harden is 33, 34. Mm-hmm. So the question was going to be, like, if they win the lottery, are you still going after James Harden? And the answer was yes. Had they won the lottery, they were still going to go after James Harden. So that situation was obviously something that, and by the way, Buna Enjai, who's Victor's lead agent, as I was calling, I spent the last couple of days calling around to the top and texting with people in the top 10, you know, just asking him what their feel was, you know, like how they would see him fit. Cause I had to talk about it, you know, and the teams that I was talking to were saying, yeah, we've been in touch with Buna. You know, Buna was, you know, out there talking to the teams, you know, getting a feel for where they were. So there was some alignment, you know, so they knew, you know, Victor is aware that, you know, had he gone to Houston, it would have been as part of a sort of a cog in a fast intention to improve team. So Houston was probably the secondary thing. So Houston and Portland come up. And let me say this about Charlotte. When I was first here in January, I had some discussions with Victor and his agents about various teams. And I wasn't sure where Charlotte, that was one of the teams I wasn't sure about because they haven't historically been a spending team. They've generally been an underwhelming team. They've had moments, but they've generally been an underwhelming team.
I believe they haven't won a playoff game since returning to the league. Or no, they did. They haven't won a series. They had the 1-7 game series. I think otherwise they've been swept.
Okay. You know, they and New Orleans are the two teams that have never paid the tax, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was a favorable outlook from Charlotte, from the Wembanyama camp. One, because Nick Batum was there for years and really liked it. And Batum was one of his mentors.
And got paid handsomely.
He did. He got $125 million from Michael Jordan. I also think Batum liked Steve Clifford, liked playing for Steve Clifford, and passed that on. So I actually think that Charlotte was not an undesirable location. Like if you're listing the place, I think Charlotte would have been okay. And they have LaMelo Ball. And, you know, assuming they bring Miles Bridges back, which is a big assumption and kind of a big topic that I don't really want to get into now. Right. But the concept of playing alongside LaMelo and Miles Bridges is interesting.
Him playing alongside Mark Williams, who was Charlotte's representative on the lottery, also would have been very interesting.
Well, Victor doesn't want to play center every possession. Yeah. Obviously, he's, you know, I don't think that was an encumbrance, although I didn't see Mark Williams' reaction because I was focused on the room. So, but Bontemps or McMahon, you mentioned it to me on the text chain that he.
No, I was just a little odd, but I think Victor is a 7'5", 4'5", whatever we're calling him. Power forward slash center. I really do think those guys could have worked together.
Yeah, Victor's not. I mean, Victor's not a center. Like, if you try to play him at center every game, like that's not going to work. He needs to play next to a center anyway. With his shooting ability, you can do that.
Yeah. So, so when you got down to the final two, and obviously it's happening very fast. Okay. So now the Spurs. The Spurs have been following and aware of Victor for years. 3, 4, 5 years. They obviously, as you guys know, have heavily scouted France for decades. They have drafted a number of French players, not just Tony Parker, Jan Mihimny, for example, all the way back. That was like mid-2000s as well.
Another Boone client, by the way.
Right. Obviously, Boris Diaw. They didn't draft him, but obviously had a very good career there. You know that they have built their team in a lot of ways on scouting Europe. I know Ginobili is Argentinian, but they scouted him out of Europe.
Right.
Trust me, the Spurs dreamed of Victor for the last 5 years. And
it's not a coincidence that this is the year they chose to finally tank.
When I came over, when they dumped Dejounte Murray and Jakob Poeltl and the way they played. When I was over here in January, when I spent a week here with Jonathan Givony, the Spurs were here. Lock, stock, and barrel. They had a bunch of executives and scouts here. The Spurs are very private. I don't want to make assumptions and everything about their business, but let's just say I stood next to Brian Wright, who's a general manager, and we watched Victor go through his stretching routine, which is sort of well known by now. It's watched. It's not like Steph's shooting routine. It's not quite that, but it's one of those things you want to see because you see the 7'5" guy walk on his fingertips and toes, and juggle, tennis balls and do band work on his feet to strengthen his feet and all of this routine that he goes through. And I stood next to Brian Wright as he was videotaping it on his iPhone. So the Spurs heavily have studied and prepared for the idea of drafting Victor Wembanyama. And the league sent out a memo last week that said, you may not declare that you are, remember the old LeBron where they pulled out the jersey?
Yeah.
And the Spurs generally are pretty big rule followers. So naturally, Brian Wright, who was in the room for the lottery, and Peter Holt, their managing owner, both, followed the Adam Silver edict of not saying who they were going to draft. I am telling you, the Spurs reaction and party, they had a gathering of their scouts and everything in Chicago. From what I understand, it was quite the response. So the Spurs are an extremely popular team here in France. Obviously, Victor knows about the Spurs and followed the Spurs because Tony Parker won 4 titles there as he was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Although several of the titles happened, I think one title happened the year he was born. He was a few months old, and one title happened before. So he only maybe was aware of 2 of the titles.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click, Grainger.com, or just stop by. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. It is.
I think he's pretty well versed in the history.
Yes. So there is, obviously he's got to follow in Duncan and Robinson's footsteps and, Tony Parker, who he played for Tony Parker's team last year. But it's not like he wasn't, if he'd gone to Charlotte, it's not like there wasn't going to be high expectations for him.
Right.
In the moment, so we had a camera on him, the understanding with the family was they didn't want that shown live just in case it was uncomfortable. But it wasn't uncomfortable. He smiled and he put his hands up, and then for a minute, he kind of got a little emotional. His mom was right with him. And later on, our cameraman, showed his mom, Elodie, the video that they took. And she, after watching the video of them, she cried, after that. So there was this emotional moment. I don't think it was necessarily crying because he was going to San Antonio, although that was a place that he was definitely happy to go. I think it was just the gravity of the moment that his future was decided after months of doing that. So, and then he immediately came over, to talk to me, which, you know, it wasn't the greatest interview of all time. But like he had known he was going to San Antonio for literally less than 2 minutes when he came over. Mm-hmm. And I was afforded 75 seconds for the interview. That's what I was afforded by the producers of the Draft Lottery show, because we had to get to a Laker game. If you want to know the honest answer. And I think I did it in
not just a Laker game, Western Conference Finals game one. This wasn't, you know, come on. It's a pretty important game too.
But I think if it had been any Laker game, I would have been under the same mandate. But yeah, so
Wendy's life, inconvenienced by LeBron.
So that was the night, and you know, everybody stayed. You know, there were people from Nike there. They passed out these really cool hats. I'm gonna show you so the YouTube audience. So
you won't put it on your hair though. That product in there, you can't mess it up.
But this is what I want to show you. So I'm told that this is not his official
logo.
Looks
like I think so we got a hat that says Nike on the front of it.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to show you the rest.
I'm telling for the audio listeners, I'm just explaining what we're seeing.
And on the back, it says, I'm going to show you the logo in just a second, but on the back it says May 16th, you know,
the date of the lottery.
And it says, be unique every day, which I don't know if that's going to be a slogan, but he has a logo, which is not.
I would guess again, that's going to be his slogan if it's on the hat.
Again, not an official logo, I am told, but here we go. It is
an alien. I got a feeling
it is a green alien that says Wemby next to it.
I've got a feeling that will be incorporated into an official logo with Nike. Yeah. Also, what's your eBay handle so people know where to find that hat?
Yeah, I'll sell it.
Do eBay's happy handle? I don't know.
I will give it. You know, I'm not a flat bill guy. You guys know.
Bend the bill, you bird brain.
No, I'm not wearing a Wemby hat, but it says Wemby with an alien logo because obviously LeBron called him an alien. I am told though that is not their marketing campaign. That their marketing campaign will be built around him being a supernova. I don't know how that is designed, but I'm sure Nike
alien
working on it. But it is. I have to say, like when I saw this logo of the alien with the word Wemby, I had to laugh because everybody's logo is there, and he doesn't have a signature shoe or anything, but everybody's logo is their initials or their number. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of the things I like about Jokic is that not that he's got his own shoe line, but he's got like special shoes and he's got like a little, it's like a clown. It's because it's
the Joker. Joker.
Yeah. It's a Joker. I like that because I don't want necessarily to have everybody's initials or whatever. So I think they should stick with the alien, if you ask me.
But I agree. I like it. Let's talk about the fit with the Spurs, because I do think I was actually talking during the season to an executive from a team that's in the lottery, and we were talking about, you know, potential places for Wemby, and he essentially said, you know, hates to say it, but he thinks San Antonio would be the best possible fit. One, obviously, because you know just the culture, you know, the history there. You know, we'll see how long Pop sticks around. I think this certainly could motivate him to continue coaching for a while. Also, because his thing was, and you kind of alluded to this with the whole Houston Harden situation, like Wemby wants to be the centerpiece of the franchise, right? And have things kind of play off of him, where the Spurs have some nice young pieces, but they don't have, like, those guys aren't stars. They can, I think they can fit really well around Wemby. And it's a team that still has like $30 million in cap space, a ton of picks moving forward.
I think they got five extra firsts between now and 2029, I think is what
something,
I
said. Yeah, I believe that's true. And I tell you, you talk about like you want to play him maybe a lot of times with a center. I think Jeremy Sochan might be an ideal guy to pair him with. He's kind of like the comp you hear with him a lot is Draymond. He's that type of like versatile, physical, smart defender, you know, offensive playmaking type of guy. And just to give you an idea of how high the Spurs are on Sochan, I asked Pop about him late in the season. And Pop compared him from a competitive standpoint, from like a makeup standpoint, to Manu Ginobili. And Pop's not like a pass out compliments, you know, just to say something nice really? About a guy. He compared him to Ginobili. And I'm like, wow, okay, they really like this guy.
And Pop doesn't really like to talk to you either. So, you know,
nobody likes talking to me. Like, he's right. not unique in that regard. Pop's actually been a sweetheart in his pregame pressers for the last couple of years.
Awful.
So, yeah, exactly. He'll go back to being an ass now. But, you know, so that's how high they are on their guy they drafted in the lottery last year. Vassell and Johnson, I think, you know, if they're like 2, 3, 4 type of guys in terms of pecking order, I think they, you know, those are guys who have proven they can put up 20 per game. Trey Jones, I like as a young point guard. I don't know that he's a long-term starter. I think he's going to have a really good, solid career. I'm curious, you know, with that $30 million, do you go out and do you try to like, do you try to get in the Van Vliet market? I'm curious, like, do they prioritize trying to get kind of a veteran point guard, to run the show and make things as easy for Wimby as possible?
Well, the thing about it is like, on one hand, I don't think they have to sign anybody. They could just save it. But on the other hand, they have to start to pay some of their young guys. Mm-hmm. So you may want to spend your cap space, even if it's just to acquire an asset or two.
You also can't save your cap space anymore, or you get fined essentially. And then under the new collective bargaining agreement. So the idea of saving your space, like teams used to just have less money, you know, be able to do stuff during the season, that those days are over anyway.
Right.
So
but I mean, like taking on contracts,
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, another Texas team for you to pay attention to, McMahon. How's that flight schedule from Dallas to San Antonio?
Oh, there's plenty of them. Yeah, I know a bunch of good taco joints down there. I've tried to pass them on to Fidel. He didn't seem to express a whole lot of interest, which surprised me. I thought you'd dangle some tacos in front of him. He'd be all about it.
Well, and you made the point, McMahon. I do think it was interesting to see how excited Victor was about going to San Antonio last night. And obviously, like you laid out, Brian, there's a ton of French connections there over the years. But I do also think, like Tim said, it's very clear they have the Victor group, you know, with Buna and Jeremy and those guys, they have a vision laid out for how they all want, including Victor, how they want him to play, how they want him to be used, how they want him to be the centerpiece of everything. And San Antonio, of all these teams at the top of the lottery, that is the most blank slate of all these teams. You know, even teams like Detroit and Houston, they have other top five picks on the team. Charlotte has LaMelo. Portland has Dame. Dallas has Luka, right? Indiana has Tyrese Haliburton. You go down the list, all these other teams have established players and stars. San Antonio's, they've got some nice young players. They've got Devin Vassell. Like, they've got Keldon Johnson, these other guys, but they don't have anybody that you look at and say, well, this is their team. And now Victor comes in, and the whole thing is going to be revolving around him just as he wants. And it's going to be very fun to see how that develops over time. Cause you know, it seems like this, if they were going to pick a spot, it feels like this is the spot for a variety of reasons they would have picked.
And their young talent, I think, really fits around him, right? You got Vassell and Johnson, you know, can both shoot it. They can score, but you don't necessarily want them to be your number. You don't want them to be your number one offense threats. And then Sohan's just like a do everything, you know, hyper talented, athletic glue guy type of guy. So they can be, I think they have a chance to be competitive very quickly while also letting this thing grow organically. And then, you know, how quickly they're really competitive, I think really kind of depends on that point guard spot and obviously Victor's development, durability, et cetera.
Let me leave it at this. If we want to move on to the conference finals, they really didn't want anybody to have favoritism. They didn't really want to project that one. As you guys can obviously figure out, for public relations reasons, for relationship reasons, you don't say like, we want to go somewhere, because then if you don't go there, you know,
you have the 86% chance you don't at the top. You
there
know.
Was a lot of discussion about Détroit last night and how Détroit fell right out of that top four, which was a disaster.
Is that how you say it in French?
I don't know, but I was talking to somebody. The Pistons apparently had a staff dinner at a high-profile restaurant in Chicago, Someone I knew was
that was
nearby.
Probably a pretty quiet dinner.
Pin drop. Apparently,
yeah. There was a pissed off after that fifth pick was announced.
I mean, that's kind of devastating.
It's a reminder. It's a reminder that you got a lot better chance of finishing fourth or fifth in the lottery than first under the new rules. And like Detroit has been, you know, the San Antonio and Detroit were basically in the same spot, right? Two teams, and even Houston. All three of those teams, yeah. Three worst teams in the league, lost 60 games, all hoping to get the number one pick. One of them gets the first pick, the other two get fourth and fifth.
You're more likely to get fifth than first.
Yep.
Or than any of the top four. 52% versus 48 in the top four.
Yep.
Clearly. It could have changed who they were going to hire. And now I think that's a factor. But anyway, they were very careful not to play favorites, not just this week, but also when I was here in January. They were very happy about San Antonio.
Yeah.
There was a lot of smiles in the room.
Well, it was fascinating to hear Victor talking about the fact that in the morning, like if I remembering correctly from listening to the interview, he was like, yeah, this morning I said I was going to be a Spur. Like that was sort of like what he was sort of wishing for, which I thought the whole thing was interesting.
Wishing for, I step back from that, but I think that outcome was more than acceptable to them.
Yes.
I think they are pleased. And I was talking to Felix, his father, about the practice facility the Spurs are building, which will be the finest practice facility in the NBA. And is it opening next year, McMahon, or is it?
I believe it's opening next season.
So I said, you're going to want to get down there and get a tour of that. So it'll be the house that Wembanyama built.
Tour that practice facility, the arena, not so much. The arena very frequently smells like cow manure.
And watch out for snakes and bats.
There have been both in there.
I maybe need to, before I leave town, I need to stop by and warn him about the snakes and the bats.
He'll have to learn the English word varmint.
He knows it. He knows his English is spectacular.
How's his Texan?
I didn't get to see. He does. You know, he said he likes. You know, he spent 3 weeks in Texas last year.
I know he did.
It was Dallas. Yeah. He says I like Texas.
Well, he better like Texas because you're going to be there for a while, one way or the other.
Now they hope for about 20 years.
I'm going to be honest with you guys. I mean, I watched clips this morning. I went to bed at 5:30 and I got up at 9:30 Paris time.
Windy sleep updates.
Yeah. Well, what do you want me to say? That's true. I didn't get to see much of that game, but Bontemps, I know you were watching it, and McMahon, I know you were watching it. I'll let you take over here, Bontemps, for a second. But obviously, Nikola Jokic is averaging a 30-point triple-double. He's averaging a 30-point triple-double, shooting 56% in this postseason. That is Wilt Chamberlain-type stuff. And I am looking forward in this series, regardless to how the adjustments going back and forth. Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic might be about to stage a historically great series going up against each other. And as someone who's a neutral observer.
Okay, go on.
As someone who's a neutral observer, I'm here for it.
I'm here for it too. But I was gonna say, the fascinating thing to me about this is the Nuggets won game one, and I feel like they're the ones who have to figure out the adjustment for game two. Because the Lakers found an adjustment to get back into the game in the fourth quarter. And that adjustment was essentially, hey, AD can't be the primary defender on Joker. Like, he's killing him. And it takes away AD's ability to do what he does best, which is, you know, be that rim protecting, you know, just long arm everywhere help defender. And so they put Hachimura, who I would anticipate would be in the starting lineup. They put Hachimura on Joker and then put AD on Gordon, and AD just clogged everything up in the fourth quarter. The Nuggets have to figure out their spacing in that situation, because Gordon in the dunker spot played right into AD's hands and almost allowed the Lakers to come back and steal that game.
Yeah, I mean, watching that down the stretch, I mean, Jokic kept getting what looked like he was setting himself up. He kept backing Rui down, having a fairly decent open six-footer over Rui, and then deciding to just pass out repeatedly. He only took two shots in the fourth quarter, missed them both. Like, to me, the adjustment was just, hey, Joker, turn around and shoot the ball over Rui and score, which he is, as we all know, not necessarily what he wants to do, right? He wants to sort of get everybody involved and set stuff up. And, you know, he finished the game 12 for 17. He was 12 for 15 going into the fourth quarter after he hit, I'm sure you saw, Brian, the circus three-pointer over AD. That
what are you going to say about that?
Right, well, which AD was just laughing at on the court, which is all you can do. It was an interesting game, to your point, McMahon. Like, you look at these numbers, both teams shot 55% from the field. The Lakers hit a ton of threes in this game, 11 for 24. That's a lot for the Lakers. They're probably not going to shoot like that on a regular basis in the series, but they got to the rim at will. For as good as Jokic is, we know he's not much of a rim protector. Lakers shot really well in the paint. That's probably going to continue. It'll be interesting to see if that adjustment pays some dividends. And it does continue to mess the Nuggets up going forward, but LeBron played 40 minutes at 26, 12, and 9. Looked pretty good in the game. Coming off 3 days rest. AD, 40 points in 42 minutes. Monster game from him. But now that the series is going every other day, and the Lakers are behind for the first time in the playoffs, it's going to be interesting to see if they could keep up that kind of effort game to game to game. Because you know Jokic is going to be able to play. Well, I was just going to say, you know Jokic is going to be able to play and put up numbers game to game. He's pretty consistent with what he does.
But he played 42 minutes too. And I do think that he showed some fatigue in the fourth quarter. They adjusted. And I think that, you know, he was probably gassed. The guy played 42 minutes. The man grabbed 21 rebounds and dished out 14 assists.
It was unbelievable. He had 12 rebounds in the first quarter too. Like, it was almost, he almost had a double-double by the end of the first quarter.
The start to that game was absolutely insane. And look, Joker, obviously, like, if you have 14 assists, guys are hitting shots. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was awesome in this game. Jamal Murray was, you know, he was really good. I thought Porter Jr., and it was interesting, Michael Malone made sure to shout out Porter Jr. for what ended up being the biggest hustle play of the game. He gets down on the floor. There's a scrum. He comes up with it. That leads to the Murray lob to Aaron Gordon. That was kind of the dagger play. I thought Porter Jr., I mean, he was a plus 20, best plus minus in the game. But, you know, he's obviously a scorer first and foremost. 15 points, 6 to 12 shooting. That's good. For him to be a plus 20 when he's not lighting it up, really, to me, and we've talked about this all year long, the progress he's made from a maturity standpoint, from not being a one-dimensional player, I thought this was a really good example of that. Moving forward, assuming that the Lakers are going to try to have AD in that rover type of position defensively as much as possible instead of the primary defender on Joker, it will be interesting to see how Aaron Gordon is affected by that. Yeah, you can't just have him down there in the dunker spot and let AD stand in front of the rim and clog everything up. Because Bontemps, you said easy six-footers. They're not. I don't agree with that, because they're not easy when AD comes late to contest and you know, might swat the thing. Gordon's not a very good, particularly corner three-point shooter. I don't know. Do you have him on the wing, put Porter in a corner? Do you go small? Do you play Bruce Brown more? That's going to be fascinating moving forward.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
They call it running a business for a reason, because every day feels like a sprint to the finish. It takes a lot of work to make it all work. But with Clover and Merchant One, you're always a step ahead. Now is the perfect time to upgrade your point of sale technology. We make it easy to accept payments, run your entire business, and sell more. Clover plus Merchant One, better business solutions. Go to clover.com/M1 to get started. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Yeah, I just think if you look over the general course of the game, I think that game was much more of a Denver Nuggets style game than a Los Angeles Lakers style game. And the Lakers were in the game in part because Austin Reeves hit, I think, four or five three. He went five for nine from three. And I think he hit four of them in the fourth quarter. And like Denver was also
when they kept sending an extra body at LeBron.
Yeah, they kept doing very soft switches on LeBron at the top and leaving Reeves wide open. That to me is a fairly easy switch to a fairly easy change to make too. Just don't do that. Don't give up wide open threes to other guys. Because at the end of the day, the question to me coming into this series was whether the Lakers would be able to keep up on offense with Denver. Because you see in this game, Denver got to 132. Lakers get to 126 on a night where they shot 55% and they hit 11 threes. Lakers shooting 33% from three in the playoffs. They're probably not going to shoot like that on a consistent basis.
D'Angelo Russell might make a three at some point in the series, though.
He might, but they're probably not going 11 for 24 consistently from three.
Yeah, but same either way because.
Well, Denver is a high powered offensive team that is a terrific 3-point shooting team.
One of the reasons why Denver shot such a high percentage was they kept getting offensive rebounds and were able to get second possessions. The Lakers were the number one defensive team in the playoffs coming in. And granted, they played two teams that were relatively small. Memphis is small with who they had healthy. And, you know, Golden State elected to play small quite a lot. They were stunned by the size differential. They didn't start a lineup that was appropriate for the size differential. And the number of offensive rebounds that they gave up, especially in that first half, that undercut their defense. They got a lot of stops where they couldn't finish the possession. And so the Lakers' strategy is to play the number one defense in the playoffs. And they were not able to do that because they couldn't finish the possession.
I don't think there's number one defense against Joker, though. And they figured something out late, but we'll see.
I'm also going to push back slightly. I don't think that Rui Hachimura guarding Jokic is going to be something that's going to flummox the Nuggets for the next five games either. It was a good adjustment that messed them up. And the Lakers started to hit some shots, and it felt, frankly, like a Celtic game in that they controlled the game. And then all of a sudden, everybody got kind of tight. It's like, oh, no, what's happening here? We're going to lose this game. They found a way at the end to pull it out, because you mentioned that loose ball that the Nuggets picked up. Like watching the final couple of minutes of that game as Lakers got it down to four, got it down to three. If the Lakers had found a way to win that game, It would have been a little early to say the series was over, because obviously it wouldn't be over. But man, that would have been a hammer blow to Denver to absolutely dominate that game and blow it late.
Yeah, that hammer blow, Darvin Ham, hammer blow.
But they managed to survive. Now they get a couple of days to sort things out, and we'll see what happens again. Too,
that was happening was that AD was challenging shots, which you want him to do. And he was vacating the paint, and the guys that the Lakers had down there could not handle Jokic. And so Jokic just vacuumed up rebounds. So while I agree with you that Rui Hachimura is not shutting down Jokic and that they will just change their actions so that Jokic can isolate him more and you know, take advantage, because, you know, he's going to solve every riddle.
Right.
Just having another big out there to get rebounds.
Hold on. Let me stop you right there. So in the game, the Lakers had 30 rebounds total. Okay.
How many Davis, have?
I'm getting to that. Anthony Davis had 10. LeBron James had 12. The other six players who played roughly a combined 200 minutes. They got eight rebounds.
Right.
Rui played 28 minutes. He had zero rebounds.
I know, but the rebounding in the second half when he was playing was more equitable.
They managed not to allow Joker to out-rebound them in the second half, as he did in the first half. And again, I'm not making that up. That's a true stat.
I know.
But the rebounding Murray, it's not necessarily
was 23-8 or something at one point.
Yeah, it was 16-13 Joker over the Lakers in the first half. I think they might have taken one away, so it was 15-30. But the Hatcher-Murray defense was just about – he was able to be competitive as the primary defender, but that was about putting AD in position to be the rover. I mean, so it wasn't like one-on-one, Joker's going to light
For
on
sure.
fire. But when he has AD's help, it's like what the Celtics do when they play Horford as the primary defender on Joel Embiid, but Robert Williams is flying around and a threat to swat any shot and, you know, deflect any pass. And again, I agree that Joker can figure it out, but they've got to figure out the spacing.
Yeah, they for sure. And yeah, I wasn't insinuating that you were saying that Rui shut him down either. It's just the point you make, Brian, is the real one, which is that coming into this series, the massive difference between the bubble series and this one was that in the bubble, the Lakers had JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard to throw at Jokic and have AD doing this roving floater stuff, while having a real big body going up against mm-hmm. Jokic at the other end to bang on him.
Yeah.
In this series, the Lakers have nobody who can really guard Jokic other than AD. And like you can,
clearly AD can't either, by the way.
Right. And like that, exactly. And like that was a good curveball to throw at them in the fourth quarter, and it messed them up a little bit. But I just think if they're going to try to do that over the course of the game, like, I know what you're saying about AD coming over McMahon, but like Jokic was just casually backing Rui down to 5-6 feet from the basket. And I feel like he could have very easily just turned around and flipped in 5 or 6 hook shots if he wanted to.
You got to make it more difficult for AD to be in that position. And so the man he's guarding can't be standing 6 feet away.
Exactly.
You know, that's a pretty simple thing there. Look, if Aaron Gordon's in the corner, maybe AD says, you know what, just like the Lakers did with Dylan Brooks, hey,
let him
that
shoot
guy's
it.
Taking threes, we'll live with that 100 times out of 100. But you at least have to make it so where you have that option of, okay, fine, well, this guy's going to be able to get a wide open three if you want to have AD in the paint like that. Another pretty massive difference from bubble series Lakers Nuggets to this one, KCP changed locker rooms. KCP changed uniforms.
Kidding. He made some massive plays in the fourth quarter when things were looking rough. Hit a big three.
Yeah.
I mean, he was all over the place for them.
I mean, he's having a great playoffs. As Michael Malone says, this is a 10-year vet who is a champion and is built for these kind of situations. We've talked about what a phenomenal move it was to trade for him. Wendy mentioned the very reasonable extension for him. That's a huge, huge, huge difference. But dude, Joker, we're watching a historic playoff run here. I'm looking at Stats Williams in our Stats and Info Slack channel, which is a massive technological advance for me to be able to use these things. But Joker this postseason, 31 points, 13 and a half rebounds, a little over 10 assists, 56% field goal percentage. First player ever to average a 30-point triple-double after the first series in the playoffs. The only other guy to do it was Russell Westbrook when he got swept in the first round his MVP year. Certainly, Russ's field goal percentage was not at 56. Matter of fact, Joker's the first one ever to do 30-point triple-double on 50% or better. And like...
Yeah, just to read his line last night, because we've talked about it. 34 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists, 12 for 17 from the field, 3 for 3 from 3, and 7 for 8 from the line. That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Sheesh.
If he keeps playing like that, they're winning the title.
Yeah. And that's what's in front of him. 7 more wins. Obviously, they win a title. And he's undisputedly, in my opinion, the best player on the planet. Like every question about him. Every question about him will have been answered. He's already proven the past few years he's the best 82-game player. The question was, is he a guy who can deliver a team to the finals and win a championship with some of the limitations he has on defense and some of the other questions that are about him? So far, he has answered that with a resounding yes through the first two series in a game.
Whether it happens or not, I think we can stop debating whether he's capable. I mean, the guy is clearly capable.
No question.
Right? That doesn't guarantee it's going to happen. But, I mean, you don't have the playoff run that he's having. We have, well, is he capable of being the best player on the championship team? Absolutely, he's capable.
He has answered that resoundingly, for sure.
All right. Well, we're not going to talk about the Boston series because it's happening in a few hours and I want to be stale. We'll be talking about that a lot later. I'm headed to Boston tomorrow. Actually, I'm headed to New York first and then get up and then Boston in the afternoon.
How much sleep will you get?
I'll brief you.
He'll be working a lot and not sleeping a lot.
We can just save that for on those international flights. You get those fancy lie flat seats, right?
I have no comment on that.
Just cuddle up. They give you a nice little blanket, little pillows.
How do you
get one of those little neck pillow thingies too? Come on, Wendy.
How do you know?
Put some Grey Poupon on your sandwich and, you'll be all right.
So we'll talk about that later in the week. We'll talk about that later in the week. I'll be joining Bontemps for game two of that series in Boston, and McMahon's headed out to LA for
what a rude awakening. You go on this sweet little Euro vacation, doing all the wee wee Paris stuff, and then you got to deal with Bontemps.
Wee wee.
Yeah. Well, it was a great experience to come here and see this with Victor. It was not a vacation, regardless of what some people might assume.
Brian never taken vacation. Brian Windhorst, never.
Eiffel Tower today?
No,
the Louvre?
No chance. It's 4:30. I haven't left the room yet. I've been on TV and on potting. I walked into the hotel at 3 something and wrote until 5:30. The sun was up when I went to bed last night. So
it's just the hardest. It's the hardest life of anyone I've ever met. McMahon.
Hey, I'm just
it's
telling
so,
you.
It's so hard.
They got a lot of great violinists in France.
Maybe we sure do.
For Wendy.
Going to need to find every single one in the Paris Symphony and have them just set up outside the hotel and just playing for poor Brian. You did a hell of a job with the interview, though, man. That was great.
It was very cool to see.
It was fine. It was just the circumstances of it were good.
Look, you and Gavoni have done a phenomenal job on the Wimby story.
It's been great
for months now. And if people didn't see like the SportsCenter stuff, like look that stuff up.
Yeah. Brian and Jonathan have written about
that you guys
it.
Yep. Wrote. Yes. Like we, take a bow. Take a bow.
Yeah, it's been a great, when he played so well in Vegas, I was really fascinated, not so much about his play, but his makeup. And I wanted to kind of find out how he became who this person is. And I found out and I wrote about it in a couple of pieces and I don't know, maybe it's the beginning of a Hall of Fame career. Maybe it's the beginning of not. I don't think he's a can't miss player. I wouldn't say that about anybody,
but I think he's
fascinating.
I think he's the best prospect that we've seen in this league since the dude who you watched plays high school debut and ran back to the Akron Beacon Journal, giddy as could be. That guy's turned out pretty good.
This team that he's playing for here is there's a chance it's going to fold. And I'm not a memorabilia person, but there were people getting his autographs on these jerseys last night, including Mbappe. I was like, that might be worth some money. I'm seeing like this yeah, Jordan,
pretty good chance.
This Jordan stuff 40 years later selling for millions of dollars. So, all right.
Well, he's certainly getting expectations placed upon him. That's for sure. He's not going to walk in with an easy, carefree debut to his career. There's going to be massive expectations.
Very comfortable with them.
I agree.
He's coming to win rings ASAP. Get ready.
That's what I saw him tell Brian Wendy Wynn.
That's right.
Live on TV.
I was interested in that answer.
In Paris.
Yeah. I was interested in that answer. All right. Thanks to Jackson. Thanks to Bontemps and McMahon. Thank you, Kibbles and Hoop Collective. We will talk to you in a couple of days.
Adios, amigos, and take a nap.
We needed a French sign up. Bon temps.
But no, that's his last name.
Yeah, it also means times. Good times, which you are not. So
no, neither are you, brother. Misnomer. Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.